Hello and welcome to an Arsenal podcast, A Bergkamp Wonderland. I'm the Goonaholic, and somewhat surprisingly, I've been invited back to host the show for a second time. Before I forget completely, can I also mention at this stage, big thanks to thearsenalshirts.com, you all know Gav, I'm sure, for sponsoring the show for the second half of this season. I have set myself a challenge of being the first host to restrict this show to 90 minutes, so you don't have to listen to us in instalments. Hoping to frustrate my ambition will be my fellow guests this evening. First up is a man whose vision and unwavering commitment to all things Bergkamp Wonderland, and who is the producer of this weekly madness, most of the radio shows and the live hangouts we occasionally do. So simply put, he has to be here. Good evening to Danny, the GFP. That's himself, son.
That is brilliant, Dave. That's one of the best intros and most politest intros. But there again, you are a gentleman. So thank you very much for that. I'm really good. I'm worried at the alarming rate at which my fingernails are growing at the moment. But apart from that, I'm really good.
Oh, blimey, I wonder what you're going to say then. I thought we were going into werewolf territory.
Easy, Tiger. Can't do that with you here.
Good man. Next tonight, I'm delighted to introduce a man whose photographs of Warsaw are unmissable. So if you aren't following him on Instagram, do so. He is the Arsenal's unofficial chief scout in Warsaw, but had absolutely nothing to do with the acquisition of Christian Bielik, which is probably why Christian's such a good young prospect. It's a warm welcome to Lord Hillwood of Twitter fame. How are you, Steve?
Yeah, I'm fine. Thanks, Dave. Thank you very much for that warm welcome. I'm actually taking a risk with having the window slightly open tonight, hoping against all odds that no one has a chip pan fire or sets their fire alight in Warsaw. Those of you who are regular listeners will realise I do live opposite the central fire station in the business area. So we may get some sirens later. It's not
and
a scouse
of warm this evening if you've got the window open.
Yeah, it is warm. It's about 23. It's raining, but it's not too bad. Not too bad at all.
Good man. Thank you very much. Finally tonight, it's a pleasure to interview one of our talented team who combines doing the podcast, radio shows and hangouts. And he has promised us that he has got a Wi-Fi upgrade so we can enjoy his input even more. He is tonight's hipster in residence. No show can be without one. Good evening, minus the oft uttered expletive, to Ellis. How are you this evening, my friend?
Thank you very much. I wouldn't quite say I was a hipster. But,
no, but you're the closest thing to it on this show, let me tell you that.
It's probably not hard. But yeah, I am just about here with better Wi-Fi, but not on a laptop and struggling to sit by my charger whilst I talk to you on my phone. But we'll see how it goes.
Going great so far. Thank you very much. Right then, let's get on with the show. If I'm going to make it 90 minutes, I'm going to have to speed along. First up is going to be what we usually call scores on the doors, which is Danny's update of reserves, youth, the ladies' football and the injuries. Danny, over to you.
Right. My friend Angela in Australia will like this bit because we include women's football and she doesn't even like football, so but she was quite impressed with that. So start off with the ladies. We drew 0-0 away at Yeovil Town in the Women's Super League. Is it WSL, Women's Super League? I'm never too sure what they do sometimes change the name over the seasons. We're not going to win the league. That's not the point. But we're in the league table. We are fourth. And we are on equal points with Reading, which isn't too bad. We're never going to win that league anymore. But we are in the cup final, which is going to be the 5th of May against Chelsea. And I, for one, will be watching that because it's going to be brilliant. The next one is the under-23s. We went and beat West Ham 3-1 at their place. Reece Nelson, Eddie Nketiah got 2. And we are only 2 seasons after getting promoted back to the top league of youth football. We are champions. Well, that's quite an achievement. A few years ago, I remember us moaning, going, why are we in the second tier of back then it was under-21s. And it was awful. And now we've won it. That's fantastic. So well done to Steve Gatting, who's the manager of the under-23s. Well done to Eddie Nketiah and Reece Nelson and Josh De Silva and Smith Rowe, Willock, Dragomir and Charlie Gilmore and John Jules from the Ministry of Sound Party and and all these other wonderful players. I'm not going to list them all, but you expect in the next season or so a lot of these players to come through already, because in the Premier League we have had the most number of minutes from youth academy players. I think it's something about 6,000 minutes. And then someone pointed out that Hector Bellerin has a lot to do with that because he's nearly played every game this season. But it has been it's been brilliant to see all these young players come through, and so well done to the team, because I don't think they get enough credit for it. But always go and have a look at George Bird, that's spelt with a J. Go and have a look at all of his stuff, because he keeps everybody really up to date. And now the next bit, this is a, you might want to cover your ears up for this one. The under-18s went away to the scum up at N17. They beat us 9-0. But I was just, I thought, that's a little bit dodgy. Then I had a look. We had 15-year-old Miguel Aziz playing. He's so young that I couldn't even find him on any of the websites. I had to go and do a Google for him. And even then, all I found was his date of birth, which was quite surprising. And then we had the 2 16-year-olds playing against a team where they've got this striker who's got 20, he scored 4 that day. He's got 27 goals in 19 games. But Steve, you said there was some another reason as well why they got hammered.
Yeah, the problem was is that they played on Friday and they got 2 players seriously injured. They were down to 9 men in that game, so they couldn't play. And also the fact is Arsenal playing in the FA Youth Cup final shortly. So lots of those players were held back out of that Spurs game to avoid injury in a derby for the Cup final. And of course, as well, there's a couple of those youth players who are training with the first team as well. So basically, the squad was hideously depleted. We were playing with the bottom of the teapot.
Good. It'll give them some good experience, though. Right, there's only 3 injuries. Will Shear has got an ankle injury. He's back due back any day. He's been out for 10 days. Santi Cazorla, we all know. It says 2 weeks, but I don't think it's going to be. 552 days out. Henry Mkhitaryan is 2 weeks until he's back. He's missed 19 days with a MCL tear. And Mohamed Elneny is going to apparently be out for 6 weeks. But I was asking Dom in the Fannies group, and he was saying that he could well be back in 3 weeks. So either way, hopefully he's back for the end of the season. But personally, I really hope he's back for the World Cup, because Rami Shaban is a fan of Egypt as well as Sweden. And I think he's quite excited to see him play. And I saw Mido, the ex. Remember that Mido was at Spurs, and he's had more clubs than Nick Faldo. And I think he retired at 29. And he managed Zamalek. He actually did a nice tweet the other day saying that good luck to Elneny. Hope you're back in time for the World Cup. I only saw that because Rami retweeted it. So he's already lost 2 days. But that's all of it. I won't bother doing the loan watch because they're all an absolute disaster. So back to you, Mr. Hollick.
Oh dear, don't like the sound of disaster for our loanees. Not going to get a lot of money for them in the summer, are we?
No.
Anyway, now, the last match that we played was obviously the West Ham home match on Sunday. I have to be totally honest now and say all I've seen of the first half of that match is what was on Match of the Day. I did catch the second half. I'd like to split the discussion, if I can, into kind of 2 different zones. I'd like to talk about the match itself first, and then afterwards look at the atmosphere and the things, issues surrounding Arsene Wenger at the game. So, Steve, I wonder if you'd like to give us your take on the match as it was on Sunday.
Yeah, okay. He said, sounding rather bored, and that actually sums up how I felt about the first half. Iwobi managed to have another dreadful game where he ran up blind alleys, did his stamp and shit tail sign, where he holds onto the ball and he can't make a decision what to do with it. So he stamps his foot on the ground so the defenders know he doesn't know what he's doing, so they immediately tackle him and rob him of the ball. Damn, quite a few times. There was a lot of few chances. No one really got on the end of anything. There was a couple of quite naughty tackles. There's a lot of left to right, too much passing around the outside of the box. I think sometimes they're too afraid to lose the ball instead of just shooting and seeing if somebody spills the ball up or makes a mistake.
We regulate that, aren't we? That does my brains in.
Yeah, it was very much sort of like jacker in, left, right, round the corner, back out again, over the other side. They were nearly running around like a bee in there, trying to get something working out. But, you know, the problem is that, you know, Elneny can be as busy as a bee in a tin as he likes. If no one up front's moving off their marker or there's no runners, you've got nothing to create with. So it's a bit like a carpenter being asked to make a table without any tools, really. And that sort of summed up the first half for me. In the second half, obviously, you know, we came out the second half, we looked a bit more lively, but it was a bit sort of more of the same, really, until the goal went. And, you know, that sort of sparkened and livened things up. But that also made Moyes react. And I thought Moyes' substitutions were very good, bringing on Lanzini and can't remember the other...
Chicharito.
Chicharito. Yeah, bringing on Chicharito. And that sort of really raised West Ham's level. So now we had a real game on our hands. They really started pushing us back. They started, you know, getting the ball off of us. They were pushing us back in our own half, getting down the left quite a bit, getting some crosses. Didn't really get anywhere with it until, of course, you know, that they scored. Then you thought, oh, no, you know, we're going to have a real game on our hands here. But it was quite strange after that. West Ham sort of didn't keep the pressure up after they scored. They went sort of like, took their foot off the gas a bit. And then all of a sudden, the ball's gone over the pitch and we brought Aubameyang on and he started causing their defence a lot, asking their defence a lot of questions because his movement across the line, along the line, ghosting at the back of the line, you know, was really unsettling them. You know, no one was really sure about who should pick him up. Lacazette was working really, really hard. And then all of a sudden, what happens? Ramsey gets the ball. Aubameyang shows where he wants it. Ramsey puts that ball in. I swear on my life, Aubameyang shouted mine behind poor Rice, the West Ham defender's head, because the guy ducked to leave it for the keeper. You obviously heard something. And the ball that Ramsey put in went straight in the back of the net for 2-1. And that was sort of almost like, that goal was almost like the nail being pulled out of a flat tyre. And all of a sudden, West Ham just deflated and Arsenal got their confidence back. We were swarming forward. Lacazette was an absolute nightmare in the first half and the second half. The problem is that our players need to watch what he's doing. They need to look at his runs because he's trying to run in behind. He's trying to peel off of them. But defenders at the back, when they get the ball off of the keeper, they're not looking for him making that run. They're not looking to ping a ball over the top of midfield for him to find. They're not, people aren't putting the ball in between the centre halves for him. But in the second half, yes, he was being a menace and he got a, you know, well-deserved brace of goals. You know, we ended up winning the game comfortably 4-1. Although the result, if you like, you could say it deceives because 4-1 looks very comfortable, but actual fact, for big parts of the first half and some parts of the second half, you know, if something had gone wrong, we could have quite easily lost that game or drawn it.
Yeah, I think that's a fair comment.
Yeah. And, you know, as I said, you know, the key moment was that for some reason that defender ducking. Oh, and of course, as it always comes when you play Arsenal play against Joe Hart, he loses concentration and you know, 1 minute he's making a brilliant save off of Xhaka, another one he's making a brilliant save off of Welbeck, and the next minute, you know, he's done it again. He's letting a goal on his near post off of Lacazette that he should have got.
Yeah, mind you, he did not whack it, didn't he?
Oh God, yeah. You wouldn't have wanted to catch that in the danger zone.
Orchestras.
Oh.
Right. Anyway, good stuff. Thanks for that, mate. I think I saw this eventually the same second half as you. I hadn't thought, though, about Aubameyang having shouted mine. You're suggesting that one of our chaps is guilty of gamesmanship or unfair play. I won't have it. Anyway, Ellis, you were actually at the game, so I think you're probably the best person to tell us or give us your impression of the atmosphere, because I've heard conflicting reports about it. I did watch the game on television. I did hear lots of levels, admittedly at different volume, of the One Arsene Wenger chant. What exactly was the atmosphere like to you who was in the stadium? How was the treatment of Arsene Wenger by the crowd as a whole?
I don't know if it was the fact of obviously his announcement that came out before the game or if it's just a nice day, but it's the first I've been for about 5 or 6 games this season, and that game was the busiest I've seen for a long time. I was at the Stoke game and there was hardly anyone there, and today there's a lot more people around the ground, going into the ground, a lot more people sort of down Holloway Road near Pirate Corner and all that. It was a lot more busy everywhere and it just seemed a better atmosphere. The club shop, the Armoury, was packed with people buying Mercy Wenger 22 shirts, and yeah, it was a good atmosphere. I saw a tweet from John Cross saying that Wenger didn't get a good enough send-off and that we only sang One Arsene Wenger when we were winning, and the stadium wasn't full. But for me, that's the fullest I've seen the stadium at all this season since I've been anyway. I don't know what it's like at other times when I've not been to the game, but compared to what I've seen on TV as well, it looked quite full. Obviously the middle tier, the sort of the posher seats were still quite quiet, but the lower tiers were busy and the upper tiers soon filled up after kickoff. And in terms of the One Arsene Wenger chant, it was chanted quite quite a few times. I was down in the clock end with my old man, and it got going sort of just as we kicked off. As the players come on, it came on a bit. It sort of rung around for a couple of minutes and then died out, as it normally does with most of our chants in the stadium. But to me, I thought the atmosphere was a lot better. I would agree that it probably wasn't sung enough, but I think that's a lot to do with the way we played. Like Steve said, the first half, we just sort of done this sort of shoehorn passing where we got around to one wing and it came back around the box to the other wing, and we weren't really penetrating enough. There wasn't really that many chances. And West Ham were just eager to sort of soak that up and then lump it upfield, because that seemed to work for Newcastle when we played against them. But for me, I thought the atmosphere was quite good. I suppose it does vary where you sit in the stadium. I think the Clock End and the North Bank, the atmosphere can be a bit better than sort of the East End and the West End. But to me, I thought the atmosphere was the best, especially since I've heard it and seen it, since I've been up this season at all.
Oh, good. I'm glad about that, especially with Thursday coming up, because I think the crowd are going to play their part on Thursday, or hopefully they'll play their part. Danny, I don't know if you were up while these Sunday lunchtime kickoffs are going on, were you? Did you see any of it?
How dare you, David, be so presumptuous. Yeah, actually, I missed the first half. I was asleep. I only woke up at quarter past two. I went, oh, might as well stick the game. I had 5 hours sleep that night. I was down a YouTube rabbit hole until 8:30 a.m. I saw the second half. I think I got the best deal, actually. I think I should. Everyone should just
you
listen
and me
to
both.
Me when... Yeah, I was quite impressed by it. I saw the first half on Match of the Day, what little of it they did show. But I was just impressed. The first thing I thought is, like everybody else, why are you playing Lacazette when we're playing on Thursday? But there's a difference between being fit and being match fit. And I think that gamble paid off 100%. It's football, 110% as it's football. With Lacazette getting man of the match, getting two goals. We did see at one point, I noticed he was running with one of their fullbacks and he out-sprinted one of their fullbacks. Now, around Christmas time, he wouldn't have been able to do that because he was carrying that injury that Chris told us that he was carrying an injury, and he went off, had the operation. I think he's got 19 goals for us this season. He says, talking slowly so he can click on the number of goals this season. Oh, he's got 15 out and 4 assists. That's where I was getting the 19 from. Yeah. And considering he has been injured for part of the season and had recovering from the injury, and in between that he was having the operation, to still get 15 goals this season, that's really good. That's from 35 starts, so that's one goal every three games. 15th, and that's not, it's one goal every two and a bit games, three games. I can't bloody count, can I? Yeah, so I was really happy with that. Welbeck, it's good to see that although Welbeck didn't have the greatest of games, he still had a half decent game. And I don't, Ellis, were the crowd on Welbeck's back or not? Because he has been getting grief up until the last month or so, hasn't he?
No, not really. I think from the crowd position, I think the only one that's really been getting a lot of grief this season is Alex Iwobi, and it's just because of the poor form he's in. Welbeck, as we know, he can be hit and miss, but I think he's been quite good in the last few games, and I think that helps the fans. And because he's one of those players that sort of gets up and down the pitch, will run for you, I think he does get an easier ride than someone like Alex Iwobi. But and obviously form counts into it a lot. But no, I don't think anyone's really frustrated with Welbeck, especially on that day.
Well, I like to see that, because Welbeck's form for England has been brilliant, and I just think he needs to find his position in this team. It's not as a striker, it's not as a winger. I think it's just as a general forward who can play anywhere across the anywhere behind them, the main striker. I thought Xhaka had another good game, which is important. Ramsey was brilliant, and that way that he I was thinking that the only way that goal could have been any better if he'd have done a what's it when you stand on one foot and then you kick the ball with the other foot, but you kick it kind of wrap
Rabona.
Oh, that's it. If he'd have Rabona'd that across to show off and it had gone in, I thought that is the only way that goal could have been any better. The back five were looking pretty solid. Mustafi was out of position quite a few times. I don't understand why Koscielny was playing. Koscielny doesn't have the legs to play, or doesn't have the ankles or the Achilles to play two games in the space of 5 days. And I don't think he should have played. He should have been rested. And in unimportant games like this, people like Matt Macey should be getting a game. Because West Ham were never going to beat as well. Then they've got one player on the pitch. It's that shitbag Arnautovic, who did his usual tackle shove. And who was it he shoved into off of the pitch? Was it
Matthew Debuchy, wasn't it? I think he ended up dislocating his shoulder, and that was basically his Arsenal career over.
Yeah, he injured that person a few years ago.
He did it to Aubameyang.
Oh, there you go. I knew he did it to someone again today. He's an absolute shite hawk. Yeah. So and Joe Hart, you gotta wonder what that bloke has got to do, because we had 20 shots at goal, and of those, we had 8 on target. So we could have had a lot more. Joe Hart got a lot of grief on the radio and Match of the Day for his performance there, but I think his entire defence let him down. And they had one player who, their number 26, Masuku. He was fucking abysmal. Sorry for swearing, Dave, but yeah, he was absolutely abysmal. Ogbonna, he was terrible. Rice, not really his fault. He's a young man, and I think there may well have been some dark arts. I think someone may have put on an accent and gone, leave it, I've got it. It's a little bit like someone in the crowd when they used to have a whistle, and they blow the whistle and all the players would stop playing. I think it was something along those lines. But yeah, I enjoyed the game, but only because I saw the second half.
Excellent. Before we leave the West Ham game, there's just one thing I was wondering about it, and it was a team selection thing, and he said he was going to put the players out with Thursday in mind to try and get them used to playing with each other. David Ospina's recalling goal. Steve, what did you think about that?
I was actually a bit shocked when he came out, and then I read that Cech had a slight groin strain.
Ah, did he?
So that's why he... I took it as that's why he sort of didn't play him. Ozil was allegedly ill again. I reckon Ozil just doesn't have an immune system. But that actually, to be honest, with top-class athletes, not having an immune system actually is something which is quite common. Because they're actually so physically fit, their defences are lowered, so they're vulnerable to lots. But, yeah, there was a few weird selections there. I think the thing that pissed me off the most is how is it that West Ham got away with some of those appalling tackles? One in the first half was the typical one that Xhaka would have been sent off for, and the other one, of course, was where Elneny got injured, and Mark Noble wasn't even booked for it.
Sorry. Well, I was going to say it was a strange one, because I must admit, for once, I don't think it was a particularly bad one by Noble. It looked like it was kind of his landing foot gave way underneath him. And yes, it was a foul, but it wasn't the foul that caused the injury, if you get my drift.
Yeah.
Maybe I saw it wrongly, but...
They seemed to kick each other, didn't they, on the other foot, and his landing foot went.
Do you think we should have a moment of appreciation for the fact that Monreal has now got 6 goals in 33 games? Paul Pogba has got 5 in 32, and he costs 10 times as much.
Yeah, Nacho Monreal's got to be a real good shout again for the player of the season for Arsenal.
Certainly, and I listened to Alan Davies slating him. Now, I don't know if he was doing that in tongue in cheek, but the new Tuesday Club pod, do you reckon he was doing it in cheek, saying that he was a terrible defender and he didn't like him?
Yeah, surely. Yeah, absolutely. He can't think that he's worse than Gibbs.
He's a
cheek. Right, okie dokie. I think we have now done West Ham United to death. So the next thing I wanted to get to was that today there have been a number of leaks and suggestions from the three wise men who are selecting the next Arsenal manager to replace Arsene Wenger. And some of the names were interesting, one or two surprises in there for me. But I wanted to have a general discussion and an idea from all of you. And probably best if I go to Danny for starters, just to give us a brief resume of Mikel Arteta, Luis Enrique, Domenico Tedesco, Julian Nagelsmann, and Leonardo Jardim.
Okay, I have all these ready because you are so organised that I'm completely ready. Right, as we know everything that we need to know about Arteta. Someone in one of the WhatsApp groups that we're in noticed that when Pep got sent off, none of the coaches stepped up to go into the managerial area. The zone or whatever they call it. And they said that was quite quite a thing. But he's been assistant manager at Man City since 2016. 12 games. He's never played for Spain. He played, was it 110 league games for us with 14 goals? And yeah, so don't need to really cover him. Luis Enrique, 47 years old, Spanish player, 62 games for Spain. He's managed Barcelona B, Roma for a season. And I think Josh was saying that he's an absolute horrendous manager there. Then he went to Celta Vigo for a season, and I don't think he did much there. And then he had three seasons at Barcelona, and I think any of us could manage Barcelona for three seasons. He 181 games, won 76% of all of his games. And while he was at Barcelona as a manager, two La Liga titles, three Copa del Rey, which is the Spanish Cup. He won the Spanish Charity Shield. He won the Champions League. And in fact, one season, he did the triple of the Champions League, the FA Cup, and the Spanish League, the Spanish Cup, not the RFA Cup, because they probably win that, and the UEFA Super Cup and the FIFA World Club Cup. This is the kind of thing where we'd need some expert on Spanish football like Chris who to come in and go, well, why did he leave? Does anybody know why he left Barcelona when you've got a 76% win rate and he lost 21 games out of 181? Because I've got no idea.
Wasn't he tired and needed a break?
Oh, that old one.
Yeah, I think that was the second time. I think he needed that after his unsuccessful stint at Roma as well. He was only there about 9 months.
Roma, he was there from June till May. So, yes, and he won 40% of the games, and Celta, he won 37%. So a lot of people seem to want him, but they may be people who don't know anything about football, because I have no idea. Now, the one in, Domenico Tedesco is an Italian. He's manager of Schalke, which I always pronounce wrong. And currently he's managed them since July last year. So it's his first season, 36 games, all competitions, 120, drawn 8, lost 8, 55% win ratio. And currently in the German Bundesliga, if I talk slowly enough, I can click on the link and then find out where they are in the league table. No, I can't. Oh, why haven't you got the league table on this bloody page? Oh, here we go. Well, they're not bad. They're second, but they are 22 points behind Bayern Munich. So there again, you might as well just disqualify Bayern Munich from everything in there, because they're so much better than everyone else. So Schalke are top of the league, 2 points ahead of Borussia Dortmund. That sounds much more like it. The next one is the one that interests me the most, is Julian Nagelsmann. Drew, who used to be a part of this pod, there's nothing he doesn't know about German football. And I think Drew really likes Nagelsmann. He's only 30 years old. We can't have a manager who's half your age, Dave, who's only two-thirds of my age. How is that even possible?
Less than half, I'll have you know.
Yeah, that doesn't include VAT, but all I know about him is that he was a youth player at FC Augsburg in 1860 Munich. He got an injury and he retired at about 19, and then he went off to university, and then he came back to Augsburg to work briefly with Tommy Tickles before he went off to Dortmund, and then he was the manager of Hoffenheim since 2016. At the moment, he's got Serge Gnabry there, who is on loan from Bayern Munich and is doing absolutely amazingly. So his record there at the moment, played 91. Someone got to say something then, because I don't leave much room for anyone to butt in.
No, I think there was a mute button going on somewhere.
Okay. Hoffenheim, he's played 91 games, 139, 42% win ratio. But I was looking at a thing that I shared in one of the groups on YouTube where they break down all of their tactics in a four-minute video. And I think it's quite similar to the way that Arsenal play. And I think the likes of Ozil and Mkhitaryan would thrive in there. But I'm sure that he only plays one person up front. But that's my terrible memory for me. Yes, he's only 30. He was a centre-back and he's 6'3". So he's slightly Jurgen Klopp. Jesus. I can't afford a £10 fine. So I'm not telling you what's happening in the football. Oh dear, but Harry Kane will claim that. So yes, the next one which you want is Leonardo Jardim, which is Chris's choice, and I know you've got a little bit about what's happened today with him. He's been manager. He's 43 year old. He's born in Barcelona, Venezuela. and he has been manager of Camacha, Chaves, Bahia Mar, which I know is in Portugal, Braga, Portugal, Olympiacos. It seems every manager goes to Olympiacos for one season, wins the league, and then leaves because it's so easy to do. He was there for a season, then Sporting Lisbon, he was there for a season. He's been manager of Monaco since 2014. And we all know that when it comes to French football, the feeder league, Chris is never wrong, apart from when it comes to that bloke. Is Malcolm? No, not Malcolm. But Chris, that's who Chris wants. Currently at Monaco, this is with them selling all of their best players every time they get one. 216 games, 121 wins, a win ratio of 56%. And he's won the cup in, I don't even know where Camacha is. Where does that? AF? No, I've got no idea. Oh, it's in Portugal, apparently. He won a cup with those. He won the second division with Bahia Mar, Olympiacos. He won the Greek League and the Greek Cup double. With Monaco, he won the league last season, beat PSG to the title, which is really good because they have more money than any of your gods, including the Viking ones. Yeah, so I think that's them all. But the most, he's managed 561 games, which is a lot of games for someone who's 43. Again, another manager younger than me. I don't like it. So, yeah, Dave, there was some interesting information today from Chris, wasn't there, about Jardim and what's going on at Monaco?
Ah, was there? I don't know about that, but I know a man who does.
Go on,
Steve, you have got your own thoughts about Jardim, and I think you've got, I wanted to try and restrict the discussion, but I think you've got another guy who's been tipped, so I'll open up to your extra guy who you know about, and we'll bring him into the discussion. Launch us off, mate.
Okay, okay. Well, Jonathan Johnson, who's like a freelance UK journalist reporting on French football, he's basically said that Monaco are actually looking at a former player who's an ex-PSG and the current River Plate coach, Marcelo Gallardo. It looks like, therefore, Jardim is potentially off. And they're basically saying that Monaco looks to have lost steam under him in recent weeks. Perhaps he's, perhaps his eyes are elsewhere, so perhaps he has been contacted by Arsenal. And the other bloke that's also being considered, which is somebody Sven Mislintat has put in the mixer, is Ralf Rangnick, who's the sporting director of Red Bull Leipzig, but he was previously their manager as well. So you've now got in that mix there, you've got three German candidates. You've got Rangnick, you've got Nagelsmann, and you've got Tedesco, who's, although he's Italian, is a Bundesliga manager. Quite an interesting mix of people. If you wanted me to give my opinion, I think it would be utterly ridiculous to put a nearly £2 billion asset, biggest club in London with the biggest social media following out there, with the history Arsenal's got, in the hands of an ex-player through either through penny pinching or money saving or revolutionary ideas. I can understand taking a chance on a young manager who's up and coming, who's doing something, but to give a job to someone who's been someone's assistant and basically got no team managerial experience at all, to me just seems insane. And I also think, from a corporate point of view, that when you get rid of a manager because club level's not being renewed and people are not renewing their season tickets and bums on seats aren't there, you need to make a statement and get a manager that's gonna fill those seats and get those things booked and excite the fans. You're not going to end the current malaise if you bring in Arteta, in my opinion, especially not after 6 months if you're in 17th place. That's my take on that. I mean, I don't know what the others think, but I mean, I somewhat agree with Danny about Enrique, because I think we need a manager who's going to be there longer than 3 or 4 years. Can't have someone who suddenly says, oh, I'm a bit tired. If he got a bit tired running the lesser club he was running before he went back to Barcelona, and he made a bit of a mess of that out there as well, I can't see that he's going to be able to deal with the stress of the British press, to be honest. For me, yes, I can see the attraction of him, and obviously he's a favourite of Jose Sanyes, but missing that's candidates. Nagelsmann, I must confess, I don't know too much about, although Red Bull Leipzig have done very, very well in the Europa League, and they've pulled out some surprises in the Bundesliga. However, they have got a horrible habit of being shit at defending and collapsing and getting battered. That sounds way too familiar for my liking. Then you've got Nagelsmann, who is brilliant tactically, operates a system I think our players would flourish in. He's a young manager. The only problem with him and Tedesco, who's another excellent young manager, is they've not been at their respective clubs for very long, and they've done very, very well. And I can't see their clubs being very happy to just suddenly release them up to a club like Arsenal, you know, and then having to go and find a new manager. And then Jardim. Well, Jardim's a player that likes to play with youth, a manager that likes to play with youth. He likes to play attacking football. He's also a player that works really well with stats-based recruitment and scouting networks. He's set up at Monaco with all of his video analysis and all the modern techniques was fucking brilliant. That's how they ripped us to pieces in the Champions League. He's French. He speaks French. I think he's got a good footballing philosophy. I think he's quite a moralistic bloke. I think he'd fit in quite well at Arsenal. You know, how you possibly pair any one of those people up I was just talking with an Arsenal element, well, you could do it on lines of nationality. So if they go with Luis Enrique, they could pair Arteta up with him as second in command, with a view to him coming in to be, you know, on his own later. Or if they pick one of the Germans, they could pick Per Mertesacker to come and be his assistant. But no, let's see what others think.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll just, before I come to you, Ellis, I'll just put in a couple of things I've heard about the one or two of the candidates. I agree with you totally about Mikel Arteta and his lack of experience. Wouldn't mind him at all as a number two to somebody, but why would he leave Manchester City and Pep Guardiola to come to us as a number two? Enrique, Luis Enrique, you touched upon one real huge net negative for him, and that's his attitude generally, but his attitude in particular when pushed by the press. There were times in Barcelona where he wouldn't even attend his press conferences, where he would just stop talking to them for a while, or if he was talking to them, he could be very curt and brusque. And I don't think he's going to give the sort of impression that someone like even Gazidis would like to be giving as an Arsenal manager. And the last one was, I heard the most wonderful description of Domenico Tedesco, because it's his first season in the management, basically. He's the German equivalent of Owen Coyle when he started at Burnley. And I think we all know what happened there. I thought that was a wonderful description. But anyway, Ellis, your thoughts on the candidates, or the ones we mentioned this evening?
Yeah, I think everyone's sort of highlighted some of the guys' sort of strengths and weaknesses quite well. And it's clear to see some of the names that we've mentioned, who on the board or who part of the, sort of the management team may be keen on them. Obviously, I've heard stories about Gazidis favouring Arteta. Again, echoing what you've all said about him, for me, it's too soon. I think it's too soon for someone like Vieira, and even Vieira's had experience of managing. Fair enough, it's only in the MLS, but it's not quite Premier League standard. And then you've got Luis Enrique. Again, I'm just going to basically pretty much echo what everyone else has said. He's only really had success at Barcelona. And like what Danny said, most people can. I mean, it might be being a bit harsh on him. He's obviously got to compete against a good Real Madrid squad there. And obviously, the guys we're going to meet on Thursday, Atletico. So he's done well. He won two La Liga trophies with them and the Champions League. And we as Arsenal fans know how hard that is to win, regardless of who you've got in your squad. And he's obviously got links with Sanjeli, who's been at Barcelona and worked with him. So you can see why that could happen. And then you've got the links with the German guys, like Steve said, with Nagelsmann and Tedesco and the Leipzig director. One person who I think has gone a bit quiet recently in terms of being linked to Arsenal is obviously Allegri. Whether he'd want to come to Arsenal is another thing. I think sometimes we as Arsenal fans can be a bit biased towards our team and expect that everyone wants to come to us and not realise that there are perhaps more better options for managers out there than the club that's currently sixth in the league and struggling a bit and may not have the biggest transfer budget, whether you believe what the press is saying or not, to spend. So It's difficult for me personally. Of the sort of names we've mentioned, I like the sound of Jardim. I think it all depends on the direction the club want to go in. If, like Steve said, he's had a good record at Monaco and bringing a few young players. And for me, out of all the names you said there, except from the sort of Arteta and some of the younger managers, he would be a more long-term solution if you bring in someone like Luis Enrique, who we've mentioned hasn't stayed at a particular club for very long. Other people who have been rumoured, whether true or not, as people like Ancelotti, again, he's another manager who never really sticks around long, only sort of plugs gaps and then sort of buggers off after he spent quite a bit of money and sorted it out. So I think for me personally, Jardim might be a good one to go for, purely for some of the reasons that Steve has highlighted and the way he sort of brought through youth players, and he shows more of sort of more longevity there compared to the other guys. I like Allegri. I watched that Netflix documentary about Juve and the way he's tactics to and the way he works the players, and he's not afraid to call players out and get in arguments. Obviously he had those troubles with Benucci. He wasn't afraid to bench him in important games when he was at Juventus.
So that you could say he's not part of the discussion today because he's not one of the favoured candidates, and that's probably because we haven't got anyone Italian involved at that high level.
You're probably right. I wouldn't argue with you there. But yeah, for me, it's got to be Jardim, I think, is the guy that I'd like. But I could quite easily see Enrique coming in. But I'd be a bit disappointed with that. I'd be sort of like us trying to emulate Barcelona, a bit of a Barcelona light, and I'd rather us sort of go on our own sort of direction rather than try and copy anything that's worked in the past for previous teams.
So I'll put you down along with Chris as a Jardim man, and I must admit I'm coming round to that way of thinking because of what Steve said about putting bums on seats. I think he would be seen as a progressive appointment, someone who's got a lot of experience in a short space of time, produced good performances in Europe, got the French title behind him. For me, yeah, I'm coming round to the same view.
Out of all them as well, I think he represents the least risk. With all the sort of names we brought up, there is quite a bit of risk depending on how inexperienced they are, where they managed before, where they finished. And I think for me, he's the least riskier of the options that we've named tonight.
There is another thing as well. I mean, if you look at the way the transfer market's going, you know, it's quite clear that to buy top players, the deals are, they're way out of Arsenal's reach, you know, 150, 200 million pound. Well, you're talking about a bloke in Jardim who's sold a player for 180 million pound that he developed. And this is the point that he can take youth players and develop them and make them into stars. And if we are going to have to be in this business model where we develop people and sell them on, and we've got another rank of developed players behind them, like Monaco have done, then this is the guy we want. And as you know, Ellis was just saying, he comes with an extremely low risk factor as well.
Yeah, excellent. Ah, good stuff. Well, thank you for the discussion on that, boys. I think now I'm going to move it on, if you don't mind, and have maybe 20 minutes looking ahead to the Atletico Madrid game on Thursday, our first European semi-final since, is it 2009? But a night when hopefully we are going to be able to give ourselves an advantage that we can take to Madrid and defend. And please, no jokes about I don't think we'll score 8 goals, because I don't see that happening either. But where are we? Danny, what are your thoughts about, your initial thoughts about Thursday? You fancy us?
Well, when it was coming up to the draw, I said I was being quite negative, saying that I don't want to play them because, I mean, I do want to play them in the semi-final because I'd rather lose in the semi-final than lose in the final. But just looking at their recent form, we know that Costa has had an injury. Griezmann has been rested for a couple of games coming off the bench. He's been playing up front with Gamero. These are my Spanish team. I watched them the other night and they were, it was horrendous watching them. So boring. So the only one that little player I liked is the bloke called Thomas. He seemed quite lively in midfield. So their last 5 games, they've won 1, drawn 2, lost 2. They've only scored 4 goals in those 5 games. And they've only, in one, and that was, and so that was 2 of the games they scored goals in. So their last 4 games, only one of them they've scored in. I think they beat somebody 3-0. So they don't seem to be that fantastic. I know they're boring and it's the away leg and what we've got to worry about. So we've got to treat this like it is a one game, like treat this like it's a final and make sure that we hammer them and don't do anything stupid in the first leg. And if we go there with a 2 or possibly 3-0 lead, but as long as we don't concede, then I think we can do it. But I don't think that they're really up to much. Griezmann has been a bit quiet lately. He's not scoring goals. Gamero hasn't been that brilliant. I know Gamero isn't really the main striker up front. Torres his contract's up at the end of the season. Godin, their Uruguayan horse botherer, he's been out of favour lately. Oblak is, I think, the one keeping them together at the back, and I think we can do it as long as we don't concede a goal. And the away leg is we're gonna have to wipe out the away leg because we're not gonna do anything in there. It's gonna be the most boring away leg we've had in forever. But maybe if they are 2-0 down after the first leg, they might actually come out and play some attacking football because they got the players to do it. They haven't been doing it lately.
Ah, good stuff. I didn't know they were your Spanish team. What a good choice that was to go to first.
I picked those because, maybe in the late 80s they won the league and I think the next season they got relegated. And one of their players said, the captain said, I will play for the whole of the next season in the second division for €1. Something along those lines, give or take a few years. And I thought, Lord. I like that. And he did. He played for €1 for the entire season.
Oh, brilliant. Oh, yeah. Good stuff. That's completely thrown me now. I wasn't expecting to hear that.
Sorry.
No problem. Steve, I'm a bit nervous, I don't mind admitting, even though Danny thinks that they're not a great side, we've managed to make the likes of Brighton and Stoke and West Brom look pretty bloody close to Barcelona this year. So it does, I think, depend on what Arsenal turns up at. Would you agree with that?
Yeah. I think it does. I think it also depends on what Atletico Madrid turn up. I mean, I watched them against Real Betis and they really deserved to lose. I mean, Real Betis just couldn't finish.
That's the game I was watching.
And I remember sitting there watching this game and thinking, you know, they've got everybody playing here. They've got, everybody bar de Costa's playing here. They've got no excuse. Juan Fran got injured in that game. Diego Costa had gone off in the game before injured, but they've still got so much to hurt us with. They've got, you know, players who just don't stop running. I am nervous. I think we've got to be very, very careful because the big problem is that this is a team that know they can defend. This is a team of players that don't look like footballers. They look like blokes who've just been, you know, just normal blokes who work in the factory. And they don't care what happens to them. You know, they put their bodies on the line for their manager and their club and they defend like demons. And they've got a bloody good goalkeeper as well. And if we get chances, we have to take them. You know, we can't be shooting at keepers or shooting across keepers. You've got to take them because you're not... I don't think we're going to get that many chances. And I also think it's going to be one of those games where we've got the ball most of the time. And they're just going to sit back and soak it up and Griezmann will hit us on the break. So, you know, it will be very tense. We have to try and make sure they don't get an away goal at our place. We have to try and score. If we can score, we can go to theirs, even if we're 1 or 2. As long as we score a goal at theirs, and we can do that, they do give away penalties and they do give a hell of a lot of free kicks around the area. And that's good for Xhaka. That's good for Ozil. As long as they can work out how to beat Oblak. But yeah, it's a massive prospect to beat them. And then, you know, it's... I noticed as well, I don't know if you did, Danny, but in the game they played, I saw recently where they played some low down team and they were lucky to get a draw off of them in the last minute. They went to 3 at the back. And they've gone to 3 at the back so they can put an extra person in midfield. I don't know whether they're practicing that to play us, but it would look to be the case that they've got, you know, 5 in midfield so that they're actually trying to block things up again or a wall of 3 and a wall of 2, if you get my meaning. So, you know, and they've got firepower. I mean, Torres might be coming up to finishing his contract. Still a bloody good striker. He's still got some pace. And they've got some bloody fearful players. Mind you, having said that, you know, so if we, if they're on form, but they, you know, they can't go in there half construct. They've got to go in there ready and up for it from the kickoff. And another thing we can't afford is people switching off at throw-ins, dead balls. Because if there's one team in Europe that's got the master of the dark arts and taking the piss and cheating is Atletico Madrid down to a T. Kind of Mustafi switching off, and you know, do people not looking and not playing to the whistle. Got to watch what they're up to all the time. Can't have any retaliation. That they're fouling. They're doing everything they possibly can. So, you know, they're diving a lot. There's a lot of faking injury and play acting. You know, a lot depends as well on in this game about, you know, not getting bookings for a second game, and also a ref that's not going to fall for their bullshit. But we have to wait and see about that.
Yeah, I haven't seen who's refereeing, interestingly. Normally I get sent the appointments, but not for European games. So let's hope it's not someone from a little Eastern European league where they're not used to this degree of pressure and the sort of things that are likely to go on. Ellis, I'll come to you next, because Steve mentioned there the fact that Atletico Madrid are likely to go to a back three. And the question has to be begged, do you think that that will be what Arsenal do as well? Because when you think back to last season's FA Cup semi-final and FA Cup final, we switched to a back three against an opponent who we expected to give us trouble. Are you expecting to see that against Atleti?
I'm not sure. I think this season we've definitely moved away from the back three more. But like you say, we have tried to match teams who have played the back three with a back three as well. And it can work out quite well. It's worked out recently in the league against Chelsea. I think it works out well because we just sort of cancel each other out, and it gives our midfield a bit more room to do things. Whether that'll work with midfield that Atletico have got, I don't know. But like you said, I'm worried about this game. I think the home leg first isn't that bad, to be honest. I think that sort of suits us. Because however poor we have been this season, our home record has actually been really good. And we seem to still play quite poorly, but manage to win games. So hopefully the first leg can give us a nice cushion to go into the second leg. But they are the sort of team that would really sort of just worries me. The sort of team that Arsenal really struggle against. A team that doesn't like to have a lot of possession, that can sit back and soak up the pressure and then counter you and get the sort of the one goal and then just sit back for the rest of the game. Like, they are sometimes incredibly boring to watch. And that's, again, teams like that, as Arsenal's weakness, even when we've been good, they've always been our weakness. Teams that will sit back and defend, and like Steve said, master the dark arts, putting in niggly fouls, putting a lot of men behind the ball and counter at speed. It's going to be difficult. I think the back three would probably help, because personally, Mustafi, no matter how bad he has been this season and how poor he has been decision-wise, I think he looks more comfortable in a back three with whoever is alongside him. I imagine it'd probably be Koscielny and Chambers alongside him if we do go for a back three. And personally, I think when Chambers has played this season, he's looked quite good. His form over the years, or over the seasons, have been up and down, but I think he's come into it a bit. At least in terms of making poor decisions, he doesn't seem to make them at the same rate that Mustafi has this season anyway. So that helps. But yeah, it's going to be difficult, and I am worried. But okay, again, Arsenal can turn up and win easily. If we turn up and play the way we can play, we can. But it's just a case of whether we will or not.
Yeah. I think we're all of that mind. And the only reason I'm thinking we're more likely to switch to a back three is not for any deep tactical reason, but the fact that we have lost Mohamed Elneny. He won't be able to play in front of that back four if we went with a flat four. We've lost Henrik Mkhitaryan. He won't be able to play at least in the first leg. And I think your midfield options aren't that great without those two players. So I think we might just want to shore up at the back to make sure that we have got cover there when Atleti do break, because they will break. They will break at pace. They'll invite us on. And we've seen before how that ends. So I just think I would think long and hard about that.
My only worry with that is you then can be left with a two-man midfield of sort of Xhaka and Ramsey. And really, since the sale of Coquelin in January and the injury to Mohamed Elneny, there's no one particularly in that squad that I am happy that will just sit there and mop up and protect.
The option is Maitland-Niles, and he's not really experienced enough yet, is he?
No, not really. I mean, he did well when he came on against West Ham. But compared to the other two guys, Ramsey and Xhaka, Maitland-Niles has got the recovery pace, so that will work in his favour. But like you said, he is lacking experience. But we'll have to wait and see what team turns up.
Let's hope we get it right then. Danny, rather than me spring it on you in about 2 minutes' time, would you like to get some of the questions from the listeners ready? Okay. They've been good enough to ask us, and yes. I think we should give them some sort of responses. Right. So for 2 minutes, I'm going to mention once again our sponsor. Thank you to the arsenalshirts.com at this point. Gav, I hope everything goes well. By the way, if you go and have a look at that site tonight, tomorrow, he's actually got some player issue shirts there as well, and he's got some signed shirts, but I think he's knocked 50 quid off the player issue ones, and I'm sure if he hasn't, he will. So there you go. Tell him I sent you along.
You know what his answer to that will be. Yeah. He had some lovely bruised banana flip-flops that are special order only. Yes, and he's got these my super duper his shop that he's got going. He's got some decent stuff on there, like he's got these new shirts of 1886 written across the front of them. And yeah, maybe he'll
he's he could got more shops than Tesco.
Than Tedesco. Yes. So right, you want ready for some questions?
Yeah, go on, go for it.
Okie dokie. Right, I'll start off with you, Steve. This is one. Oh, this is from Noir Confidential, who, along with Nicky Wilson, is fighting for the number one questioner. He says, when Germany beat Brazil 7-1, one of the TV pundits in his country, I don't know where he is, described the Brazilians as over-motivated, in brackets, with Luiz and Cesar holding Neymar's shirt and all, and right, then he continues. After Wenger's announcement and some injuries, do you think there's a risk this might happen to us in the Europa League? That's a good question. I like that.
No, I don't. And I'll tell you why I don't. I think that the players, some of the players in this team have played against bigger teams home and away. They've been battered by bigger teams home and away. They've played against Bayern. Been battered 5-1. I don't think they were overawed or, you know, shocked at the size of the event they were playing in. Then they just were outplayed. I think the players they'll have a plan they're given, and I think they will try their hardest to execute it and get the result they want. Whether Atletico Madrid allow them to do that or whether they're strong enough to stop us doing that is another point. I don't really think that, you know, you can look in that side and say, well, there's people there who are captain of their international side. There's people there played in World Cup qualifiers for their country. There's people there who have played in, you know, World Cup later stages there for their country. So I don't think they're going to be overruled at all. No, I don't think that's the case. I think they might lose out tactically. They might lose out rubber the green. You don't know.
Okay, lovely. Right, LK has asked a question. As it's a new question answer, I'll read it. He just says, he wants to know what everybody's manager's going to be, but we've all said that. I think I'm going to go for Allegri. Although, again, I do like the idea of Conte, because he turned Juventus round and then made them what they are today. And he's leaving Chelsea. And we saw in Conte's first season how good he was at Chelsea until they decided to stop giving him money, and that's what ruined it. Right, so and he says, PS, please don't mention Brendan, thanks. So, yeah, cheers for that. LK, not FK. And one for you, David, a bit cheeky, from Davey Boyd. How long does it take the Goonaholic to get ready for a normal cricket day compared to an ABW podcast?
Cricket, God, it starts too early in the morning, so I have to kind of be up at Sparrow Fart. Then I've got to go get an early morning train, because I only really go at 2 or 3 matches a season, but usually a couple of test days out, so you need to be there sort of 10 o'clock if you want to get in the ground and get your first pint in and or your first bottle of champagne and take up your seat in time for the start. So, it's a different day out for sure.
Or your first family-sized box of Ferrero Rocher if you're Raj.
Yeah.
Can I just say it's Davey Boyd's birthday today.
So
I think
is it?
Yes, it is. I think we should all say happy birthday to Davey Boyd, who's been a long-time listener of ABW.
Happy birthday,
Davey
Boyd.
Yeah, happy birthday, Dave. You cheeky monkey.
And we might also be doing something in the summer, David, with cricket and ABW, mightn't we? If we can get you and Raj and maybe someone else to join in, And we might be doing just a one-off podcast on cricket, one on rugby, maybe one on Formula One. Just something we're trying out to fill your lonely sweaty nights during the summer.
So yeah, and hopefully the cricket one, Raj, will be able to find us a nice juicy guest as well.
Oh, yes, because there was one that he was lining up.
Absolutely.
But I normally, on some things, I don't talk. That one I won't even be on, let alone not talking.
You've got to be there, Dudley.
I'll be recording, I'll be listening, but I will not be talking. I've never watched a game of cricket in my life, or rugby. Question for you, Ellis, is... it's along the line of managers, but it's from Srinrath, who is one of the very kind people that gave us money during the Wenger announcement podcast on Friday. I don't know how Google or YouTube works, so I don't know where all that money's gone. So hopefully it will turn up in our Google Analytics account. If anybody knows where it's gone or how we claim it, do let me know, because I think you lot must have given us about 40 quid. And yesterday, Steph gave us another 30 quid. Don't know what we're going to spend it on.
Oh, he's probably a generous man, isn't he?
I think he's got too much money. Yeah, so cheers for that, Steph.
Thank you.
Yeah, he does that every now and then. And so does Petito. He always chucks us. He says he's going to give us £1 per show. And I said, don't do that. You'll be skint by the end of the season. We'll start milking it and doing one a day. Right, so this is one for you, Ellis, from Sri Guna. How do you feel about a short-term manager for now, 3 to 4 years, in brackets 3 to 4 years? Meanwhile, Mertesacker does his time, gets some experience and takes over. He seems to tick all the boxes, footballing intelligence, young, passionate and about Arsenal and cares about club traditions and values.
That's certainly one way of looking at it. For me personally, I'd like someone a bit more longevity there who's going to be there for a few more years. That's all ever known as Arsene Wenger, so maybe that's just what I'm used to for the manager of Arsenal. But I wouldn't be opposed to having someone come in, steady the ship, and then perhaps Permutters I could come in, or one of the other guys that are a bit less experienced to come in, like a Vieira or Arteta. But what I did notice at the game on West Ham was Permutters I could seem to be on the touchline a lot more, or in the technical area, shouting out when people are going over to get drinks when there is injuries. He was there talking to players, chatting with players, giving them instructions, cheering them on, clapping them off. And then when they came off, there's a little video going around on Twitter or Instagram with him and Lacazette sort of doing a successful handshake or something like that. So he obviously gets on quite well with the current crop of players. He's working with the youth team as well. And we know when he's been on the pitch, he is quite a good leader. And back when he was playing, I don't know if he still does it now, but he was collecting the fines for the team. So he's a guy who has a bit of authority. He's obviously a German player who's won the World Cup and worked with lots of German players who've won that. And so he could be someone for the future. But again, like the only issues I'd have with that is experience, like the risk you have with having someone at least experienced. It depends on the type of manager who comes on, if he's going to learn a lot from him and go from there. But we'll just have to wait and see. For me personally, I wouldn't like to do that. I'd like to go for someone, like we said, like Jardim, or someone a bit more pedigree, like Steve said, to get bums on seats and get the results going the right way and perhaps stay there a bit longer than 2 or 3 years.
Oh, and he was a Gooner as a kid, which also helps.
Always helps, yeah.
Yeah, but I think he may be, him and Arteta are too entwined in Wengerism, and I don't want either of them to be manager. This was a question from Josh Robinson, but I'll have it as more of a statement. He says, why is Luis Enrique seemingly the front runner for the job? He was poor at Roma. I knew I'd heard this somewhere, which is where he needs judging. The obvious one for me, who can't get much more out, who can get much more out of the current players, is Leonardo Jardim. So I think a few of us have agreed with you there, Josh. Right, one for you, Steve, from Craig Wellings. He said, okay, this is another good point. He says, for tonight's pod, do you think with Atletico already having qualified for next year's Champions League through La Liga, mean they might not be focused on giving us and might not be as focused as us, giving us a slight edge? There's lots of as's and us's there. You know me with words, I get confused. Good point, though.
No, I don't think it will actually have any single bearing on it at all, and I'll tell you why. Players in their contract get bonuses for winning trophies, and winning European trophies come the biggest bonuses. And I'm pretty sure that their manager will want to have that on his CV that he won it. He's never won the Champions League, has he, Simeone? No, lost in the final quite a few times. So I'm pretty sure that he'll want to win the Europa League, and he'll want to have the scalp of Arsenal on it under his belt. Let us all not forget that Mr. Simeone has got an axe to grind with Arsenal.
you love this bit. Go and tell people.
Many years ago when we played, I think it was Inter, the current Fulham manager, who was busy fouling and calling Mr. Vieira the N-word, Jules Grimondi took umbrage at this and shoved the current Fulham manager, his name escapes me, on the floor. And Simeone came in snarling to defend his teammate because he felt that calling Patrick the N-word was okay. Unfortunately, he had his nose broken by our current European scout. So he, after the game, after having been ushered away from the tunnel by a UEFA delegate, he was found hanging around outside our dressing room, where he was removed by Petit, Adams and several other burly Arsenal types. So he has got an axe to grind. And the other thing is because he's rather old-fashioned and not politically correct, shall we say, it's also the reason why he's not a candidate for the job.
And plays boring football. Just like you were saying, I'm just checked. They were runners-up to Real Madrid, got beaten 4-1 in the 2014 Champions League final, and then again to Real Madrid in the 2016. They lost on, it was 1-1, and it lost on, they got an L next to it. I don't know what that means, just maybe losers. They probably lost on penalties.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe Real Madrid just, maybe that should be a B for bribed. Real Madrid bribed their way, so that's a more believable thing. Okay, yeah, cheers for that. Right, this is one for, actually, I'm going to give one to David. The other one from Schwinn is for everybody. So, right, from Alex. I should pre-read these, shouldn't I? It's a long one. Oh, yeah, he asked me, good of Alex. He sent me a DM saying, when can I send a question yesterday? I said, do it tonight between 6 and 7. And he forgot, so I messaged him, and he quickly wrote it out. So, Alex, this is for you, Hollick. Make of this what you will, because I've not proofread it all. Regarding the next manager, he sent this to us via DM as well, so then you can get past it. Oh, for fuck's sake. he says a couple of ex-player managers have been touted, as well as young and less experienced managers from around Europe. Could the board potentially be moving for one of these instead of a more experienced name, be it in an effort to have more over control over his actions of an inexperienced younger coach who may be less likely to kick up a fuss if things aren't going well or if he's not happy with the board than Allegri or Ancelotti would do? That's pretty good.
Yeah, nice one, Alex. I do understand the logic behind the question. I'll tell you why it's doubtful. I think probably of the young and inexperienced candidates, I think the likeliest one to get the nod would be Nagelsmann, because at least he's got a couple of years behind him, a couple of good seasons as well. And I think, as the boys were mentioning, he has his team playing the way that I think now that Gazidis at least has bought into is the style of football we want to play at Arsenal. But whether Nagelsmann, we were talking earlier about putting bums on seats, particularly in club level, I don't think Nagelsmann is the appointment that is going to do that. That may not be their prime consideration, but I think it's going to be quite a sizey one. But great question, Alex. Thank you for that.
Okay, right. This one is from Schwinn. This is for everybody. So he's given us four options and you have to pick your preference. Allegri and Mertesacker, Enrique and Henri. There's too many E's in that. Enrique and Henri, Ancelotti, Vieira, Jardim and Perez. Steve, which one would you go for?
Have you muted, Steve?
Oh dear.
Yeah, sorry, I was just trying to solve my problem Danny was going on about.
Seen it as well.
We're trying to figure out why every now and then Steve's internet is kind of, we try, I'm in the chat box, Steve is working feverishly trying to unplug stuff, plug this in, move that around, put his phone on flight mode. So do you want me to ask them the question again, Steve, and then you can answer after. David, which combination would you go for? Allegri, Mertesacker, Enrique, Henry, Ancelotti, Vieira or Jardim and Perez? I think he's trying to link up people with similar backgrounds.
Yeah, with those particular combinations, I'd jump at Ancelotti and Vieira, because if Patrick Vieira can't learn something off that man, then he's not going to learn off anybody. So that would be for me, with a view to Vieira taking over in 2 years.
Vieira's not in a good mood at the moment because the mighty Portland Timbers smashed his team 3-0 at the weekend. Have that, Seattle, you scumbags. That's completely irrelevant. Ellis, what's your pick out of that lot?
Oh, it's so difficult because there's sort of the players of the second assistant manager role I do like, but with their pairing of the manager, I'm not keen on. Like, I do like the sound of Vieira being a second fiddle, but not to someone like Ancelotti, because I'm not too keen on him coming in. Again, I've mentioned that I like Jardim, but in terms of assistant manager of Pires, I'm not sure what he's really done or would do to warrant that. I know he's been around the club for a while, but yeah, I wouldn't see him in management. I don't know.
You're not allowed to say that. You can't say, I don't know, it's a 50 quid fine.
I forgot. I do know. Allegri and Mertesacker for me, just because I like Allegri. I liked what I saw of him in that documentary on Netflix. And Mertesacker seems very keen to sort of move on in the club. And he looks good on the sidelines. He's quite big as well, which is nice. Someone tall and dominant on the sidelines.
Cheeky. Steve, which one would you pick?
I'm a bit sort of like the same as Ellis, really. I like the managers and I don't like the people they're paired with. I mean, if I had to pick a pair in there, I would pick Jardim and Vieira. If I had to pick another pairing, it'd be Luis Enrique and Arteta. Because I think then you get the symbiosis of the ex-Arsenal thing and the experiences they can learn and the language and culture tie up. Ancelotti's out of the question because he's going to be the Italian manager we've seen today. But for me, you know, Jardim, yes. But Bob Pires is a lovely bloke and he's very good with players and, you know, in the club, training with them physically. But I'm not so sure that he could work with a player who's a manager who's very rigid in stopping the game, going back to video. I mean, Nagelsmann constructed a video wall down the side of the training pitch so he could stop it and show players exactly what they'd done wrong and, you know, tell them where to go back to where they should have been standing. I'm not sure Bob could sort of live with that. And Jardim's a similar, very similar type of coach. But if I had to pick one of those pairings, I'd pick Jardim and Pires because I want Jardim to be the Arsenal manager because I think he put bums on seats. He's got great experience. He's got to semi-final of the Champions League. He understood very well how to unpick Arsenal. Monaco played good attacking football and they developed great youth players. So there you go.
And I think you got your headline or your title for the podcast this week there, Danny. Symbiotically. I never thought I'd hear that on a Bergkamp Wonderland.
Is that Sim from Goonosphere? Oh, for fuck's sake.
No, don't. You're about a minute and a half
Danny. I've wet myself.
Oh, good.
I'm going to completely bastardise Schwinn's thing. I'm going to have one half compared to the other half. I'm going to have Henri and Vieira as managers with Mertesacker and Pires as assistant managers. There you go, Schwinn. Schwinn kept me entertained this afternoon. I was listening to his new pod, his latest episode. It's very good. Right, the next, we've only got two questions. So, it's meant to be you next, isn't it, Ellis?
I don't know, but I'll take it.
Okay. From Connor Jennings, what do you think will happen when Arsenal? Actually, I'm saving that for Steve. This is from Jonas, from Jonas 82, who you will know from the radio show. He's given two questions, so one to you. Now that Arsenal's announced his departure, do you expect massive changes in the squad, and will it be even more difficult to keep the likes of Ramsey, Wilshere, etc. What I've had a look at this, and I'm going to go and do some digging, as I only dig well when it comes to transfers. And I'm going to find out all the players that left when George Graham came in and all the players that left when Bruce Rioch came in and just see, it'd be interesting to see what players left the club and how many left the club. But I know Stefan Schwarz was one of them that left when Bruce Rioch came in, but I don't think we have a history of letting too many players go, but that's such a long time ago, I don't think it's relevant. So what's your answer?
That's a very long-winded question. My answer to the question would probably be, in terms of Aaron Ramsey and Jack Wilshere, I think regardless of whether Wenger had stayed or gone, Jack Wilshere probably would have been off this summer. I can't see us offering a better contract than we have and him accepting it. I think a new manager is even more likely to get rid, because I don't think he's really done anything to warrant a massive pay rise. I think he's a player that can be useful at times, but not to be relied on. Aaron Ramsey, it does depend on the manager that comes in. If Aaron Ramsey sees a guy that comes in that he thinks he can get behind and will help the club and better him as a player and help him in his career, then he's more than likely to stay. So I think we can do well to keep hold of him. In terms of overall changes, I'm trying to think of the players that a new manager might want out. Obviously, Iwobi's out of form, but another manager might think they can coach him a bit better. And again, the coaching from a new manager could make the players that we think may leave play better, and then they'll stand more of a chance. But I don't think there'll be massive outgoings. There's definitely additions we need to make, but if you believe what's true in the media, then we haven't really got that much to spend. But I suppose it depends on who leaves and what we can supplement that for. We've obviously spunked a lot of money on Aubameyang in January, which is going to take
you can't say
away.
Spunked with David in the room.
Sorry, David. I also said another thing that would give me a £50 fine earlier, but yeah. No one realised it.
Good. We'll leave it at that.
I mean, adding on to what Josh has said, I mean, money, but people shouldn't worry about what the Telegraph's writing about. Like, you know, Arsene Wenger's left the club. The press have got nothing else to write about now apart from manager speculation. So now, how else can we get clicks off of Arsenal fans? Oh, let's turn around so they haven't got any money. Look, we're holding an auction at the moment for our new kit sponsor. It's being fought out between Puma, Adidas and Nike. At the moment, bids are up to £60 million a season, apparently. Then there's this sponsor for the sleeve, which is supposed to be 15 million quid. We just added an electric car sponsor today. So, you know, and there's the new international TV money coming in next year. So as we're adding all this mound of commercial revenue, which we can use all of and not damage FFP, I wouldn't see money's a problem, especially when we're going to be selling players as well. I think there will be quite a few players out. I think Josh is right about Jack.
Stop calling me Josh.
Sorry, Ellis. Sorry. I think Ellis is right about Jack going, but I also think it's very likely that people like Danny Welbeck might go. Some players might be loaned out, like Iwobi. I also think any manager that comes in and wants to build a defence is going to think, do I really want a 32-year-old with no Achilles tendons who's got no recovery pace as my main centre-back? So, you know, there's quite a few players there, and there's quite a few players who are going to get loaned out. So, yeah, major squad-wise, probably two or three, maybe. Oh, plus keepers, of course.
Oh yeah, keepers are good.
Don't get Steve on keepers. Right, another question from Jonas for David. Besides the new head coach, what non-playing personnel changes are required to take the club forward on and off of the pitch?
That's not something in which I have the expertise or the knowledge at the moment. And let me enlarge on that. I think whoever comes in as the new manager is going to have a staff that he wants to bring with him. And that will put at risk, certainly, Arsene Wenger's staff if he wants to bring a similar sort of number in. So there are going to be decisions that are going to have to be made about all of his coaching team. Yeah, and thank goodness Steve's going to love the fact that we'll probably get a new goalkeeping coach as a result. The club have needed it for a while. A good question. I understand the reason for the question, but the answer is totally dependent on who we bring in and who he's allowed to bring with him.
Very good. Right, I nearly forgot there's two predictions at the weekend. But final question for you, Steve, from Connor Jennings. And Connor, I don't know if I'll get to it. He says, what do you think will happen to all of Arsenal's coaches, in brackets, Steve Bold, spelt B-O-L-D, Jens, spelt with a Y. Now, I think Connor may well be helping me out here because he's spelling things phonetically. That's what I like. And he's put a certain P-E-Y-T-O. Does anybody know him with the name of Peyton? I don't, I've never heard of him. When Wenger leaves, would you like to see any stay?
Well, I have no reason to think that the AST will make any changes at all just because Wenger's gone.
I think it's very likely that the only one out of the whole of Wenger's coaching staff. I mean, obviously all the
performance people that have been hired, like Burgess, Shad, medical science people, they'll all stay because they're all Gazidis hires. The people that are going to be going will be Banfield, Payton, and the goalkeeping coaches. Probably Boro Primorac for sure, because Boro Primorac was on the hit list of Gazidis to remove out the club. The other one will be Jerry Payton. And they will go because Wenger, one of the things that Wenger's reason on him choosing to go early was that he could get compensation for his staff. No new manager's going to want to have Wenger's staff in there. I think Gazidis wants to clean the club out of that influence. Steve Bold, however, I understand, has been told that he can stay if he wants to. But however, if Stoke get relegated and their manager gets a sack, I think Steve Bold might want to go for the Stoke job because actually he's an ex-Stoke player. So as David said before me, I think the real thing is this. If we hire Nagelsmann, he's going to want to bring his entire team in with him. If you hire Enrique and say you had Arteta working with him, Enrique's going to want to bring a Spanish team in, and so Sanyei probably. If Jardim comes, he's going to want to bring coaches with him and add to the technical people that we've already got. And when I mean by technical, I mean the computer video bods and all the rest of it. So I don't see any of them surviving, to be honest, apart from Baldy.
Okie dokie. There is one final question. I left this window open on its own from Nicky G. Wilson. He has done a screen grab of someone, looks like a Sky Sports thing, that has done Arsenal's nearly 11. And he says, which one of these nearly Wenger signings do you wish we had actually signed? So it's an actual team. Shout when you've got one you want. Hart, PK, Company, Vaughan. In midfield, Kante, Pogba. And then the attackers, Bale, Messi, Ronaldo's. Yep. Oh, I've started, so I'll finish. Ellis, what did you pick? Ronaldo.
Messi.
Did we nearly sign him?
Well, that's what it just said in the question. You just read him out.
If this is Sky Sports,
they say about bullshit. Everyone, don't they? They say Arsene Wenger's nearly signed everyone, so they always use it as a stick to beat him with. But out of the team you just mentioned for me, it's got to be Messi. I know Ronaldo's good, but...
One word answers, please, chaps.
Cool. Messi, okay. Then.
Right, the next two up front are Ibrahimovic and Suarez. Personally, I'd go Bale, but there again, we don't need Gareth Bale because we got Gael Clichy. David or Steve, have you got one out of those? Company. Yes. Well, didn't cost that much either, did he? He would have been the new Tony Adams.
Yeah.
Steve?
Who was that at the back? Was that Varane at the back, you said? Yeah, I would pick Varane.
Oh, no one picking Joe Hart. There's a surprise. Righto, it's now predictions, Dave. We've got two predictions to do.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll take them separately. So first is Atleti at home on Thursday. What about you, Steve?
My heart says 2-0, but I'm going to go 2-1. And I think the first scorer will be Aaron Ramsey.
Excellent. Ellis?
Considering my predictions haven't been very good this season, I'm going to take one for the team and predict a Madrid win of 1-0 and Griezmann. And hopefully that definitely won't happen and we'll win.
Who's next?
You. Danny, you.
I was typing. I'm going 2-0 Ramsey. And David?
Excellent. And I will go 3-1 Griezmann. So, next up is going to be Manchester United, which is, I think, on Sunday afternoon, 4:30, isn't it?
Yep, Sky Sports. The other game is 8:05 on BT Sport.
Okay. By the way, the reason we didn't do a preview of the Manchester United game is because, obviously, at this point, the sort of team that we're likely to play out there, we don't really know, but it could well be a very, very young team. Now that we're not under the same pressure from Burnley, we may just send a team up there to give them a bit of experience. But, Steve, what do you think is going to happen?
I'm going to be a bit miserable, I'm afraid. I think we are going to have to send... I think it's like this. I think Arsenal has to understand that game doesn't matter. It doesn't matter about where we're going to finish in the league or anything else. And he needs to just send a team up there because he's got to put a team out. I think we'll get beaten 5-0. purely because we're going to have to send up their very inexperienced defence with Ospina in goal, and we're probably going to, you know, probably have a very weak midfield. We have good strikers, but, you know, with Mourinho playing a full team and parking the bus and springing brakes on us, nah, just not, you know. And your Lukaku, the flat track bully, will be able to see if he can get a couple of goals.
Is that okay. Your first goal scorer then, Lukaku?
First goal scorer, Jesse Fireguard.
Excellent. Elias, what about you, mate?
Well, I'm going to be pretty negative as well, again, because we just don't know what team's going to be put out. And it's away from home. We've got a terrible record away from home, especially this year. We haven't picked up a single point. So I won't quite go 5-0. I'll probably go 3-0. United's first scorer, Pogba. He's in a bit of form at the moment.
Okay. That sounds decent enough to me. Danny, what about you?
3-0 Sanchez. David?
I'm going to go for 1-0. 1-0 to the Arsenal. Emil Smith Rowe to get the goal.
Oh, hello.
Yes, Dave,
Mr. Rowe.
Think of that, did you?
Next we're up is the gentleman's nods, David. Absolutely. If we can get this. We've got 5 minutes to get the hour and a half. Yep. Get on with it.
For it. Steve, who's your nod for?
My nod's to Connor Kerr, who is at all capitals, G-O-A-B 767. Very knowledgeable chap. Been chatting away with him about various managers' options. He's always good to have a chat to, so get on following him.
Excellent. Ellis?
Mine's going to be to someone who's already been mentioned with his question, Nicky Wilson, fellow supporter of the Arsenal from Norwich. So, gentleman's nod to him. And he's at Nicky with a Y, G, Wilson.
Okay, Danny, you got one or more?
No, as usual. No, I've only got the one. At G-U-N-N-E-R-B-A-L-L-Z. Him is one of my... Ooh. There's four really good Arsenal artists, and we borrowed one of... I think we've borrowed a couple of them through the season. They've all said we can use their stuff, and I always like to include one in a tweet every now and then. I always retweet their stuff. So, yeah, go and give them and all the other Arsenal artists a follow. They're all brilliant.
Ah, good man. That leaves me David? With... Yeah, I absolutely have. Second time I've given her a shout-out, actually, but the star of social media on Sunday turned out to be at Lucy Gooner, who was caught shaking Arsene Wenger's hand as he came out the tunnel before the West Ham game. So, well done. I know she's particularly thrilled about it, and that photograph has appeared on just about every significant footballing website and newspaper and what have you. So, yeah, that was that.
And Stuart McFarlane should get a mention there as well, because she said, oh, Stuart, yeah. I can see you in the background. Have you got the other end of the picture? And he just sent it to her. You think, oh, yeah. that sums up Arsenal for you. Wonderful. Yeah.
Ah, the man's class, isn't he? Absolute class. And that basically is it. So I'm absolutely delighted to have done it in under 90 minutes. I thank you all for that. And I'm going to say goodbye to you. So Steve in Warsaw, good evening.
Thanks, David. And good evening. Been fun.
I think so. We'll see what the listeners think about it later. Ellis, thank you ever so much. You can go back to being a non-hipster again.
Thank you very much for having me and putting up with my long delay to get on.
Danny, it's been wonderful. Thank you very much for all that you do for the show and your producing skills, and you'll manage to make me sound not quite so nervous tomorrow, I'm sure.
And thank you very much to you for hosting, because I said, I might as well do it then. And then you offered, and I went, yep, you can do it. And you did a much better job than I ever could do, because I press buttons for a living. I don't host radio or podcasts, although sure. Jason's making me host it on Thursday, so I'm going to try and ruin it so he never asks me again. I'm going to do it naked.
Oh, no. Oh, God. Please. That's a picture too far. Okay, let's wind it up there then. All I've got to say is thank you to the listeners for putting up with all of this nonsense. I hope you've enjoyed the shorter format, and keep it Arsenal. Night-night.
And here's some more shenanigans after the podcast ended.
And keep it Arsenal. Night-night.
Hurrah!
Nanu, nanu, cheeky monkey, scouse, wretched bastards.
How are we meant to do a fucking podcast with those scoring all the fucking time?
You can tell every time they score. They pretty much scored every time Danny was talking. You can just hear him sigh or just stop for a second and be like, oh, for fuck's
sake. You can tell then, you can tell that they've got the refs. They all, one of their goals was they had two players offside. and one of the players that actually scored it was the one of the ones that was offside. They've got away with every dastardly foul outgoing. There's no way Roma are coming back from this.
Liverpool get smashed when they play Real Madrid in the final day, wouldn't they? It's going to happen. Real Madrid will get three in a row and everyone will get mental. Now they'll score a penalty.
Roma will not be playing the OL Cool J song, Don't Call It a Comeback, because they are not coming back. They are fucked.
Definitely without an away goal.
Can I just blame this? So anybody who listens to this podcast who doesn't like Liverpool, please feel free to at John Walsh, because he forecasts in the fucking WhatsApp group that Roma would bottle it, because, quote, they always bottle it. So thanks, John, you fucking Essex amateur gynecologist git.
To be fair, he's normally Jonah. It should have worked the other way, but obviously not.
That's right. Jason's reason for making me host on Thursday, because John's a fucking Jonah. He's going to be there. Oh, poor old Oxo. They're saying that it could be a broken leg.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
I saw him stretch it off.
Yeah, he was rolling around a bit, though, wasn't he? I thought it went that bad because he was sort of kicking away. But
well, they got him up on his feet, didn't they? But he immediately went down on that. Was it the left one?
Oh, that's not a good sign.
No.
Because legally, as he started the season with us, if they do win the Champions League, we get it for a week because he started the career with us. The only way we're going to get it. Oh, dear.
Right, I'm going to get away, boys, and get myself a drink.
Well, thank you very much for doing that, David.
Thank you very much for letting me.
Well hosted, Dave.
Yeah, cheers, David. Yeah, good stuff. Good.
Thank you very much. Cheers, fellas.
Da-da. See you later.
Oh,
dear. Fucking hell. I mean, as much as I love Klopp, I don't want these cunts winning. Now, they've got to play Real Madrid in the final. I think Real Madrid would do them. Bayern would do them anyway, wouldn't they? But Real Madrid...
Bayern would do them anyway.
Yeah.
But, you know, Bayern and Real Madrid would do them because they've got way too good defences in midfields. I actually, in a way, hope it's not Bayern because Klopp knows how to play Bayern. I don't think he knows how to play Real Madrid, though. And I think one of the things is they will work out very easily how to stop Liverpool. I mean, there's no way this midfield they've got here of Wijnaldum, Lee fucking fuckwit, and who's the other bloke?
Lee fucking fuckwit. Is that his full name?
Jordan
Henderson's the guy. England legend. And the other guy who has got the number 7 shirt.
Oh, Roma! Way!
Have they got the goal?
Yeah, going away goal. It's not going to work. Would be fucking funny if they hauled them back for 4 and then beat them on penalties.
I just love it. If it's 10 minutes to go and they get another couple, that'd be amazing.
Oh, Dzeko is having a hell of a season. What are we going to call this show then? Number 239, if that's any encouragement.
Well, what do you call... You know, like you have Who Done It?
Yeah.
Well, it's like, who will it be, isn't it? Who's who?
I get what you're meaning, but that doesn't... I forgot. I said a thanks to Steph, didn't I, for the money? Yeah, I did.
Yeah, he did.
£30. He's keeping us going all by himself.
Don't put that in the extras. It'll stop him giving us money.
Nah, he's not spending it.
You know,
on
the only thing I can think that's causing this cutting in and out is that this is it doing it now?
It's doing it a lot less. Sometimes I do hear stuff via Skype that you don't hear during the pod, but I did notice it when I was editing the Wenger Friday one.
I'm wondering if it's because USB on my laptop's a bit loose.
It just did it right then.
Well, I heard it earlier and I thought it was my internet connection cutting out, but then when Danny put it in the chat...
Be quiet a second. Right, is it doing it now?
No.
Yeah, it's then that's more of electronical interference rather than just an audio drop.
Yeah,
it's not the mobile phone interference and blah, 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 like that.
I think what it is is I think when I move, I think the fucking cable of the headphones is moving in the fucking USB slot.
No, I don't move at all during pods. Jace moves non-stop. It's like a workout for him. We should sell these as Arsenal workout videos of Jace when he's doing it, unless he's hungover. Then he just lays back in the dark and goes to sleep because he's like, poor bloke, he was hanging last weekend. I think that's what the Utes say, hanging, is it?
Yeah, I was fucking bad on Sunday. I didn't get to bed till like 4 and my dad picked up at 7:30 to leave from Norwich. And I was just laying in the back of the car, feeling like death.
Oh, come on. You need to think of a name for this.
I don't know.
Who will it be?
Yeah.
It could be you. With a big finger.
Who's sorry now?
As in... What a pathetic shot at goal that was.
Yeah, it was rubbish.
I think I'm about a few seconds behind you.
We're not recording, like I say. As many times as I want. I don't know.
Head count.
Why?
Because head... Actually, you can call ourselves the Arsenal Headhunters, because headhunters are recruiters.
No reference to the Chelsea lot there, then.
Yeah, well, there is. Millwall. There is as well. No, there's just Chelsea, the headhunters.
Is it?
Yeah. Arsenal headhunters get Athletic.
That's too long. Headhunters are us.
Yeah, there you go.
What do you think of that, Ellis?
Penalty to Roma. That's not what I think.
Okay, well, I'll have a look here.
He's given it, hasn't he?
I think so.
Oh, jolly D, two away goals. A splendid business. Do you know what? They were so unlucky in the first half. Did you see that fucking shot where Dzeko hit the bar?
Was that Dzeko or was Kolarov?
Sorry, Kolarov hit the bar. Fucking unbelievable. And then they had another shot.
Shout if they score.
Dzeko had. Why?
That's harsh.
About 30 seconds behind.
That's harsh.
That's not going to stop you, is it?
That's harsh, the handball.
I think it's given the fact that they've done that at Wembley off the line to us twice, they can go fuck themselves royally. You know, I tried to watch that thing on Man United last night. Did you watch it, lads?
No, I was going to watch it. It was on Channel 5, wasn't it? I
managed 20 minutes of it, yeah?
Yeah.
And I thought, I can't watch this. It's just bringing out all the anger and the fucking hatred that I used to feel against United. And then I wrote a tweet basically with Philip Neville doing his speech underneath, saying basically that Man United players have now admitted what Arsenal fans suspected all along. They couldn't beat us on the pitch. So kicking us and cheating with bent refs, brackets Mike Riley, is all they could do. about 500 Arsenal fans decided they agreed with that. But, you know, I mean, next to them, you know, United were bad at cheating. But if you think United were bad at cheating.
Now, I'm sure you'd love to know what it is that Steve says after this, but he's asked me to remove it because he doesn't want a shitstorm of certain fans hearing it and having a go at him. So you'll have to tweet him at Lord Hillwood to find out who it is, who are indeed the biggest cheating scumbags in the history of English football, as you were.